Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
All right, it is 9:05, and you're listening to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackus, joined by Walter Assey, the president of Vernovco, who is here to answer all of your questions. And I was just telling Walter, I am the all thumbs person. We're gonna work on this together. And I'm excited to learn about all these great new things. I was just telling you that from my previous homes when I lived back here back in Montreal, all I heard was French drains. So it was like a nightmare for me. One day you and I will sit down and you'll walk me through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, in a couple of months, you'll know all about it.
Oh, God.
I guarantee.
So I want to remind everyone, 514-790-0800. That is the number you call to ask Walter Assey all of your questions when it comes to renovation. Or you can text us at 514-800. This is really your show. You are here to ask the questions.
First off, I want to congratulate you.
Oh, thank you, Walter.
You're doing amazing. And I was just listening in, and you are just doing such a wonderful job.
Walter, you're very, very sweet for saying so. It makes me feel fantastic. So we are going to take our very first call. We've got Tino, I think, from Laval. He's got a question about Kitech plumbing. Tino, take it away. Can Tino hear me?
Shopping around for condominiums, and I noticed that buildings that were built between 1995 and 2006 have this type of plumbing inside called Kitech. And I did some research on the internet, and it seems to be very bad, this type of plumbing. I don't know if you could shed some light on this.
Absolutely. Kitech plumbing was recalled. It was very popular up until 2006, you're right. And then what they realized that there was a lot of cracks that were developing over time. So it was their first attempt at, doing plastic or Kitech in this case, types of pipes. Failed attempt indeed. The percentage of cracked pipes was just simply too high. So what will happen eventually is, if it's a home specifically, if you get an insurance inspector that comes in, and they will see that you have a Kitech pipe, there's a very good chance that they're going to ask you to replace it. And it can get to be costly, because when you replace pipes, it's not just simply about the pipes. It's about the openings in the walls and everything else. And certain places are hard to get to, so you might have to open walls, in certain cases even floors.
Walls and floors?
Certain cases, floors. That's correct. So, it's something to think about. If you are buying something and you're getting a good credit for it, great. What you could always do, and I've seen it done in a lot of cases, is you get a quotation on how much it's going to cost you to replace. You want to obviously go back to PEX. But make sure that when you get your plumber in, you ask them how many openings they're going to do and where. And that will also take you to a general contractor estimate to see how much the repairs are going to cost you afterwards. So it's a kind of a two-faceted type of a job. It's not just about the plumbing. It's about everything else.
Walter, just out of curiosity, how much can something like this cost? Because it sounds, when you said floors and walls, I'm immediately frightened.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, the last job we've done, there was a lot of openings as well. Luckily, there was no floors. It costed anywhere between $15,000 to $20,000.
Wow.
That's right. So in a condo, it's probably going to be cheaper. Because there's not as much plumbing. But my question becomes also is what happens in the common areas? What's complicated about condos? It's not that you're replacing just your condo. Your neighbor above you have to replace it, because if not, he's going to leak to your condo eventually if anything cracks. The guy beside you might leak as well. And then through the separating wall, you might have the water coming in. So there's a lot to be asked when it comes to a condo building about Kitech plumbing.
So unless everybody replaces in the condo building, it's pretty risky to buy one of these.
100%. 100%. The issue is you replace your pipes, you're protecting your neighbors that are below you and next to you. What you want to ensure is the guy above you The guy below you don't really care about, but the guy above you replaces this guy.
It's like a beehive. Everyone has to work together.
There you go. And then, you know, when something like this happens, that means, you know, eventually you might get a lot of claims in the condo association, which will make the insurance for everyone much higher, and then the deductible of the insurance much higher. So it becomes like a domino effect. That's why you have to be very careful with these things.
What about PECs? Is PECs acceptable?
Absolutely. There's absolutely no recall in PECs. So you see, one of the things that we always try to gauge is when you have a new material that comes to market. The idea is never buy the first generation of anything. Okay, because that's where all the lemons come out, and then second generation comes to correct it. The third generation is usually the best. So Kitec was that first generation of pipes that came out, and then they said, "Oh, we did a mistake," and so on and so forth. So PEX has been in the market for a long time with no issues at all.
Okay, you really cleared up a lot for me. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right, that was Tino from Laval. We have a text message question coming in that's it's quite meaty, so I think we'll save it for a little later on because it's in two parts. But right now, we have Ron from Pierrefonds. I believe we can start to answer your question. Ron, you've got a question about a Maytag leaky fridge.
Yeah, now I'm just wondering, there must be a stopper from the hookup from the under the sink to the Maytag hose. Is that why it's leaking?
Okay, so just walk me through it. You have you have a water line running from the sink,
yeah,
to the fridge.
Yeah, because you have water access and ice access in front of the door
for the ice and everything underwater. Yeah. Okay, where is it leaking from?
I believe from the back. I'm not 100% sure because we noticed it leaking down through the floor.
Okay,
and we turned it off.
Oh, you turned it off. Okay, that's good. That was what I was going to tell you. Make sure that you shut off the valve. So the leak is probably not from the sink. Obviously, not from that connection. The leak is probably from either to the connection to the fridge, or do you know if the line is a flexible line or a copper line?
I believe it's flexible. I'm not 100%, but okay. I believe it is. It goes behind the stove in that.
Okay, so in a lot of cases, unfortunately, when it comes to flexible lines, certain cases they actually leak. It might be the hose itself that is defective, or it might be simply the connection to the fridge that is a bit loose. The only way you can really know is if you pull it out and look open. Once you pull it out and you open the valve, you can see exactly where it's coming out from.
Okay.
This is the issue with these types of fridges is, sometimes we've seen cases actually, believe it or not, I prefer personally copper than the flexible ones, but, you know, each plumber tells you a different story. But the only way you can really know is through pulling out the fridge and opening the valve and seeing if it's the connection or if it's actually the hose itself. And be careful because sometimes you don't see where it's leaking from. It's sometimes behind the cupboard and the water is just seeping from the floor, and that's what you see is in the areas where you don't have cupboards. So you might have a bigger accumulation under the kitchen cupboards.
Okay, thanks for your help. Have a good day.
All right, that was Ron from Pierrefonds calling about a leaky Maytag fridge. I want to remind everyone that you are listening to the Home Improvement Show. We are with Walter Assey, who's the president of Renovco, and he is taking your questions. Think about it. You normally have to call someone and they'll charge you for their time to answer the questions. He is here for that. The line for your questions is 514-790-0800. You can also text us your questions at 514-800. Again, 514-790-0800.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
The thingamajig on the whatsamabob, those are words that I use. Thankfully, Walter Assey, president of Renovco, is here to guide us through the challenge that can sometimes be home improvement. We've got so many calls coming in, Walter. We'll start with Zishan out of Contact. Zishan, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. You have a question about a discontinued gas stove. Take it away.
Yes. So you pronounced the name very well. Thank you so much.
Yay.
So I was calling. I have a gas stove because we just love cooking with gas because it just cooks it so much better. But a few weeks ago, the cooling fan just doesn't stop. Or it'll take like a day before it stops. So we called somebody in, they came in, and they told us that the something's up with the circuit board and that that might need to be replaced, but it's a discontinued Frigidaire four-burner gas stove. And I'm thinking, you know, do I change that circuit board, which I need to source from somewhere else for $200, pay somebody like $150 to install it, or do I just suck it up and say, you know what, it's better maybe to get a new gas stove, because what if something else goes down on this discontinued gas stove? So what is your opinion?
Usually gas stoves are fairly good in not breaking down like electric stove. So that's a good news for you. What you could do, and that what I would recommend you to do, because $200 might be a bit on the pricey side for a circuit board. One of the things you could do is, believe it or not, go on eBay. They have a lot of vintage parts for gas stoves, or you could call around different appliance repair shops. And a lot of the times when, you know, they keep a lot of these parts in, from older stoves and they have it in stock. I know that Service de Mille have usually quite a few parts in stock as well.
So Service de Mille was who we called, and they didn't have the parts. So I did find a supplier in the U.S. that has it like relatively economically, but it came to about, with shipping and everything, about $200 Canadian.
Okay. That's still fairly... You try with eBay first,
okay,
and Marketplace. And if you don't, then, you know, it's still a better option than replacing the whole stove, because gas stoves tend to be very pricey. So,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yes, you know, it's either paying $350 versus paying $2,000-$3,000. That's, you know, it's a big spread. So, and like I said, they don't usually break down as much. So, you know, the chances are of something else breaking down is not that high.
Okay, perfect. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right, thank you. That was Zeeshan from Konzak. Moving on, I see something here that piques my curiosity quite a bit. Asbestos as a hidden defect. We've got Sam from Glossard. Walter and I were just talking about this.
Yes.
Is there an acceptable level of asbestos before we get to Sam's question?
Yes, there definitely is. It's not the contractors, obviously, that set this up. It's the CSST and the Ministry of Health, Public Health. So when we do a test, that's the first thing we look at. If it's an acceptable level, and if it's acceptable, it's deemed normal, so it's safe for humans.
Yeah.
And if it's above that, it will tell us what kind of asbestos it is and what is the range or the level of risk.
For the person, Sam from Brassard, what is going on with you and the asbestos?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, welcome to CJ.
Oh, thank you, Sam.
My question is, if you make, let me start up. All construction before 1970, asbestos was used to make the construction, correct, of houses or buildings?
The word construction of houses is maybe a vast word.
Okay.
They used it extensively on different products.
Okay. So they used it to construct something, correct?
Correct.
Correct. Okay. So is it considered a hidden defect if, let's say, you make an offer on a building that I own, okay, mm-hmm, and you say, I purchase it for $1 without inspection?
Yeah.
Okay. So we go through the rigmarole and type of thing. Is that considered a hidden defect when you come back to say to me, "Hey, wait a second, your building was constructed in the 1920s, and you have asbestos in it"? Is that considered a hidden defect?
Okay, so the 1920s is more likely that you don't have asbestos than you have asbestos, because in those years, asbestos was not used as extensively, believe it or not. Where we see a lot of asbestos would be the 50s, 60s, 70s, and part of the 80s, actually.
Okay.
Having said that, and to put things in perspective,
right,
when asbestos was discovered, it was this indestructible fiber,
right,
that was fireproof and was relatively cheap to get. And we had a lot of it in Quebec. So
right,
all the manufacturers rushed in to use it. mm-hmm. their vinyl tiles, and that's why when you see asbestos vinyl tiles, they're 50 years old, but they look like were installed yesterday.
Right.
It's because they made the material last solid. So there was a lot of, that's why it was used. There was a lot of positive
mm-hmm. yes.
as far as the material itself. They started using it in plaster extensively. So they would bring in asbestos fibers, they would drop it in the bucket, mix it with the plaster, and that made the plaster a lot stronger. So that's why, and then the insulation and so on and so forth. So more likely than not, you're going to find it on the, in the floors. You're going to find it in boards above furnaces. You're going to find it in the plaster of the walls as well, and in the insulation, mostly in attics.
Right, okay. Yes, no, because we did have a company that came to remove the asbestos. And long story short, I got an offer to purchase my building, my commercial building.
Mm-hmm.
And I give you an example. He used the example of a dollar.
Yeah.
And then he made me the offer of a dollar without inspection.
Okay.
I said, okay, we'll go. You know, if you're willing to give that offer, I'll accept it. But then he counter-offered me when he said, wait a second, there's asbestos in your building. I says, yes, I know there's asbestos in my building because we removed the asbestos in part of the building already. Mm-hmm. But he says, no. I'm rescinding my offer because you have asbestos in your building. I said, it's a hidden defect, and I have grounds to rescind my offer because it's considered a hidden defect. But I'm saying to myself, you knew there was asbestos in the building. You wanted to purchase the building without inspection, and now you're rescinding your offer because it's considered a hidden defect. So I think
the question Sam is asking is, under the law, is it a vis caché?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer, but I could tell you, like, if usually the common sense in the question is, when you look at the year of construction,
right,
you will have all the telltale signs of what the building could be constructed off. Now, there's a huge amount of buildings in Quebec that is built in asbestos, with asbestos materials, I should say.
Yeah.
So if you were to go to NDG or you go some areas in Westmount, I mean, it goes without saying. So a good building inspector, first thing he'll say, okay, there is a chance of having asbestos materials because the building was built in that time frame. Having said that, I don't see it as a hidden defect because the asbestos is literally jumping in your face as far as I'm concerned.
Okay,
it's baked in at that point, literally.
Exactly. So that's one. There might be some legal connotation for the fact that he didn't do an inspection. So that's something you have to probably ask a real estate lawyer. But yeah, I mean, as far as his, where, if you have a legal to stand on, that's a question to ask for a lawyer. But I mean, look, it's very simple. If asbestos is not being disturbed, then it's not really harmful for you.
Okay.
Unless it starts to disintegrate and you see cracks and things are starting to break apart, then you start worrying.
Okay. We're going to have to hold...
My last question...
My last
question. Where can we find... Is there a register somewhere in the province of Quebec that tells you which buildings have asbestos?
I don't have the answer for that question.
Oh, no, sorry. Because you were...
Sorry. Do you want to hold that thought? Let's get to news. Or do you have that answer right now? Is there a website? A registry, where you can find what buildings have the asbestos.
No.
What neighborhoods, what years.
No, there's not. But, I mean, again, if you just follow the years of construction, that should be your roadmap to this.
All right, Sam. We're going to have to leave it there for now. Sam calling in from Gossard. Thank you for that with his question on asbestos. A reminder, 790-514-790-0800 for your questions for Walter Assey, or 514-800. Lots of them coming in. Remember to put your name in the text message if you have a question for us. All right, it is time for your CTV news update.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
It is 9:36. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show. Walter Assey, president of Renofco, is joining me. It's our very first chat, Walter.
It is.
Are we doing okay?
You're doing great.
Do you need help? Do you need a hug? Are you? Have we traumatized you?
I need some support.
Well, you're going to get some because I want to remind everyone, 514-790-0800 for your questions for Walter. And 514-800 is the text line. We have some text messages coming in. We're going to read one. There's no name here. Guys, remember to put your names in when you send the questions. Congratulations, Joanne. Thank you very much, stranger who I don't have your name. But the question for Walter is, I have a propane fireplace with an outside tank. Would it be best to buy a propane-powered generator and hook it up rather than using my gas generator when we lose the power? What's the best option here?
Absolutely. So when you lose power, most gas stations lose power with you. So the gas generator is useless in this case, unless you like to wait for 5-6 hours to fill up.
As one does.
Like everyone does. So the logical part would be to connect it straight to the propane tank. Now, when you install your propane tank, ask your provider to put a sensor on it and put yourself on autofill. So you tell them when, you know, you could choose the percentage, 30%, 40%, 50%. So as soon as it gets to that percentage, it sends a signal to the company and they come and they automatically fill it up for you.
That's great.
Okay, exactly. And you don't have to worry about it, especially in the case of a power failure and what have you. Usually, the good thing with the propane tanks, depending on your consumption and how big your home is, anywhere between 24 hours to 3 days without having to worry about the fuel source.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a no-brainer. In certain cases, I've seen where you have frequent outages, I've seen people install a second propane tank as well to run longer.
The backup tank.
A backup tank, that's okay. Correct. So if you have a backup tank with a sensor, you're good for 3-4 days, which, you know, 99% of power outages do not last that long.
So basically install the system that will automatically let the company know that it's time for the refill.
It's a sensor, yeah. It's a smart signal sensor that is installed on the tank, and it works great. They come, you know, usually I like to set up, I know they say 30%, but...
30%?
Yeah, but I usually like to tell them at 50% come and fill it up, just to ensure that it's always filled up.
Because you should have a 2-3 day reserve is what you're saying.
I mean, look, the longer reserve you have, the better. I mean, in an ice storm last time, we had people up to 6-7 days with no power.
That's right? True, that's true.
So, you know, the longer you have, the better. The problem is you want to ensure that your service provider is not overloaded with demand as well, and they're not going to come as quickly.
So we have another quick question here on the text line from Nick M. Good morning, because we were talking about fridge repairs first. Is there any issue with consuming what would seem to be long stagnant water from a fridge dispenser line? Now, I'm no Walter Assey, but when I hear the word stagnant...
Yeah,
it's a no-go, right?
Yeah, how much water is he missing? I mean,
I don't know, Walter.
Think of it as a garden hose, and you know, drinking that first, you know, thing that comes out of it after.
You can't see my face.
3-4 months, yeah. Exactly, and with all the heat baking, so definitely a no-go. Make sure that you drain and you let the water flow for a while before you drink it. I mean, and that should be a practice freely for any time you open a faucet and you're going to drink out of it. Let it flow for a while just to make sure if there's any sediment in the pipes that gets cleaned up before you drink a cup.
It takes a couple of minutes and it really makes a difference. Again, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show. We are with President of Renofco, Walter Assey. It's time to take all of your questions. Who do we have on the phone? I think we have Colette, who's been waiting very patiently. Colette from Myland, my former neighborhood in my early 20s, 100 years ago. Colette, you have a question about your hot water tank.
Yes, welcome, Joanne.
Thank you.
Hi, Walter.
Hi.
I spoke to so many people about it. My hot water, I live on the third floor mm-hmm. of 3 floors, mm-hmm. and I've been here for 17 years, and this is fairly new, well, since the new owner moved the hot water tanks. It takes about 5 minutes for me to get hot water, and I put the timer on, so I'm not exaggerating. It's not like it feels like 5 minutes, but it is. At 4 minutes, I have warm water. 5 minutes, I finally get hot water. And I don't know. I spoke to a plumber about it, an electrician. Every people I know Nobody ever heard of it. I don't know what to do. The landlord brought a plumber, and he said there was nothing wrong.
Okay. You said that the landlord moved the hot water tank?
He did, yes. Okay. When he bought the building, he gutted the apartment, the first floor,
mm-hmm.
and he moved the 5 hot water tanks. So the hot water tanks were in the basement. They were still in the basement, but they were moved.
Okay, and that move was drastically relocated, meaning the distance was important. Do you know, like, it wasn't, you know, how many feet?
I don't know where they were in the first place or where they moved them to, but nobody else in this building has that problem.
Okay. And you're on the third floor, so you're probably on the highest
floor.
There's
another apartment also on the third floor, and they don't have that problem.
Okay. So it's probably your location vis-a-vis where the hot water tanks are and the span that the pipes run to get there. I've seen this problem before, and there is a solution for it. What you probably want to do is one of two things. Number one, you said there's 5 hot water tanks. So you want to check the hot water tank that is feeding your apartment just to see the age of it and the condition of it. That's number one. Okay. The number two thing that you could do is install a pump. And that will get you almost instant hot water. So there is something to be done.
On the
hot water tank. So above the hot water tank, you can install a device, and that what it does, it just, you know, gives it that extra push that gets to your apartment faster.
There's another thing. Sometimes I get a smell from the hot water.
Yeah. So what you probably have is a problem with your sacrificial rod inside the hot water tank, which tells me that maybe your hot water tank is older, okay?
It's about 7 years old, I would say. They were all changed before the sale of the building.
Okay.
A couple of years before, and these bought about 5 years ago. So I would say about 7 years old.
Okay. So what you want to do is when you're going to be calling in the plumber to install the pump for your hot water tank, ask him to replace the sacrificial rod. That smell is probably coming from the sacrificial rod. That's a very common problem, unfortunately, especially in areas where you have harder water.
Okay.
Does that help you out, Colette?
Yes, I'm writing it down.
Good, good. Thank you so much.
Sacrificial rod.
And now, sacrificial rod sounds very intense. Colette,
thank you
for Mylend.
We have to add some suspense.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't see Walter Assey, but in studio, it's like watching a true crime CSI show. He's like, and tell me again, and you know, like the red tape when they're solving the crimes. Again, Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Your questions, 514-790-0800 is the phone line. 514-800 is the text line. We're going to go to traffic in just 1 second. Mike from Broussard has sent us in a text with about 3 to 4 questions or 3 questions. Mike, so many questions. I would encourage you to call in with these questions instead of the text line, because it's maybe too long to answer.
We can make a whole show for Mike.
Or maybe he can call. We can write a novel. We will write the novel of Mike from Broussard, but we are here to help him. All right, don't go anywhere. More to come with Walter Assey right now.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
All right. It is almost the end of the Home Improvement Show. My first one with Walter Assey. I hope I didn't damage you too much in the process.
You did amazing. You're a natural.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I'm also learning a lot, which is great. So we're going to go straight to the text line right now, because we have Bruce texting in with a question. I was approached by an ambitious brick mason to replace my almost 100-year-old cement window sills. There's obvious damage under them to the bricks. I would think a good pointing can fix this. He says they're now absorbing water. Does this make sense? Should I consider replacing them? Because this is big bucks. This comes from Bruce. Worth it or not worth it?
So when it comes to cement sills, the most important thing we look at is cracks. If you don't have any visual, and I'm not talking about the hairline cracks, I'm talking about cracks that are porous that will bring
in
water.
If you know you're in trouble.
That's right. And a telltale sign is that the bricks underneath will show deterioration or efflorescence. That means there's a good chance that your cells are finished. There's no sense trying to fix something that's going to keep on cracking and so on and so forth. So the quick answer to you would be 100 years old, you've gotten the mileage out. Do a proper, honest inspection on your own. Go to every window, open it, look at the cement sill. If you find that there is important deterioration, then it's time to retire them. Because the problem with this is a domino effect.
In what sense?
In the sense that if you don't replace the window sills, what's going to happen is you're going to start damaging the bricks underneath. Mm. You're going to get rot on the charpente, which is the wood framing of the house. So you're going to get carpenter ants. There's going to be many things that are going to cost you a lot more on the long run.
So basically what you're saying is don't just do a patchwork. Get it evaluated, the whole thing, before you start any kind of work. Because you can't just fix this bit and expect the rest will follow.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of it, the good thing for him, is it doesn't take an expert to evaluate. If he himself goes through and do a close eye inspection. Meaning,
oh, it could really open, just be just what he, from what he sees.
Visually.
Okay,
that's correct.
Great.
If you see that it's things that are deteriorating, if you see any cracks, if you see any telltale signs that it needs to be changed. In some cases, they put more than one sill, and that's not really great. So one continuous sill is usually the best case scenario. And then after that, you might also pick and choose. You might say, you know what, I have 7 sills that are really bad. I want to change these, but these I want to patch for now. You don't
all
have
right.
to change them all.
I hope that helps, Bruce. All right, we have time for one last call here on the Home Improvement Show. Diane from Laval, who's been waiting very patiently.
Yes, thank
Diane,
you.
Thank you so much for waiting. Tell me about your stove. Tell Walter about your stove.
Well, no, Walter, but I've never heard of this stove. It was given to me when I bought the condo a year ago. It's called an Amana. Mm-hmm. And the top is like, it looks like glass. It has burners, but it looks like it's painted on. With all little spots. And when I put the burners on, they take forever. To boil water, it's like, I swear, 20 minutes at least till it gets hot enough. And then when any water or anything drops on the burner itself, it shoots it out from the underneath, and if a child is passing by or whatever, they could get burnt. So my question is, what should I do? Should I throw it out? I've never heard of a manna.
Like it heats too fast, you mean?
No,
because if the water falls and it splashes and it burns.
So when you're heating the water and, you know, like maybe you have a cover on and a little drop of water falls on the burner, it shoots out underneath.
Oh, okay.
You can't go near the stove when you're doing that.
Okay.
I don't know if I should just throw it out. Now, if you have not had the house, the condo inspected, there was a fire with the oven, or I wouldn't be covered, right?
No, there's no reason for you not to be covered. Usually, that's more an insurance agent question. But in general, an accidental fire is not your fault. You know that there's a problem with your stove and, you know, you purposely do not correct it. What it seems, Amana, just to begin with, is a very well-known brand. It's not a fly-by-night type of brand. It's been in the market forever.
Okay.
It also sounds like you have an old generation Amana. A very old one.
Is there any asbestos inside in the back?
Very unlikely. Very unlikely. I can't tell you 100% certainty, but it's very unlikely. Bet on that. And even if there is, there's no danger. It's all in case. If everything is encased, you don't have an issue. What my main worry would be is that you have a problem with the element itself. Now,
it's glass. It looks like it's glass. It's smooth. Glass.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a question of taking a picture, sending it to a repairman, getting a quotation on the phone. Don't ask them to come, because as soon as they come, they're going to charge you a service fee, and they're not cheap, okay? And usually they come just to look at it, and then they charge you $155, and then they tell you have to order the parts and come back. So you don't need to do all of that. You can just tell them what the problem is, take a picture, send it to them, tell them, look, give me a price, So I know. And if the price exceeds $400 or $500, well, actually $300 even, then, you know, you're better off buying a $600 or $700 stove and just getting the new generation one because,
that's,
you know.
Great. So good. I might get my new stove after all.
Diane, you thank you so much, Diane from Laval.
Thank you. And welcome home.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Diane. That's very sweet. We have time for one quick one. This is a text message. In order to remediate aluminum wiring for insurance purposes, is it better to use a pigtail or use antioxidant paste? This comes to us from Joanne.
That's all going to be depending. Honestly, as far as aluminum wiring, there's a bit of a misconception about this. Is the year of the aluminum wiring that was installed, because believe it or not, we still have, till now, aluminum wiring that's being sold, except that, you know, technology have changed, things have changed. That is more likely a master electrician that have to come and do an inspection, look at the condition, and then they can give her the different options that she has.
Yeah, I always think when it comes to these big electrical questions, don't dabble. Let the professionals.
Yeah, especially with aluminum wire.
Yes, and aluminum wire electricity, that is for the professionals. Walter Assey, that's it for our first show together. The home improve. You know what? I was very nervous about this because this isn't my world, but I'm fascinated. And also, you're the home improvement detective. So it's fascinating to watch you work. You'll be back next week for another edition of the Home Improvement Show. Again, Walter Assey, who's the president of Renofco. That does it for us. That does it for me for today. I'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Weekends with Joanne Brakes. Don't go anywhere. We've got your news coming up and the car show with Lisa.